And now, here's Bill Resnick and Patricia Smith.
Hi, Patricia Smith. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you, Bill. I'm happy to be here.
Patricia Smith was an organizer and lobbyist for the Oregon School Employees Association, very recently retired. She began that work right after she was defeated in an election to retain her seat in the legislature. She had won that seat in the year 1990, representing Salem Kaiser. Before that, she was on the Salem City Council, and before that, a neighborhood activist. It was a swing district. The Republicans hated her. In fact, there was a district. She had won the district from the former Republican leader in the state legislature. And they spent a lot of money in a year that Republicans were winning, 1994. Anyway, in her legislative career, she was known as a tireless bulldog of a worker for working people. When she lost office, she was a single mother, and after a year or so, caught on with the OSEA, that is the Oregon School Employees Association, and she continued her work as a lobbyist and organizer. Recently, I went to a dinner party sponsored by the Northwest Workers' Justice Project. They offer legal assistance to low-income workers, many immigrants without all the documents. They do it on matters of wage theft, safety, retaliatory firings, abusive debt collection, all kinds of things, access to medical care, and, of course, other miseries inflicted on the poor in this society. In the ceremony, after some eating and getting a little tipsy, and also after having years of working in the legislature alongside Patricia Smith, who also they put on the board, she was one of the founders, actually, the Northwest Workers Justice Project awarded their highest honor to Patricia Smith, Tribune of Worker Justice. So, Tribune of Worker Justice Smith, tell us about the people you represented in Salem and what you and your allies, including the NWJP, do as lobbyists in the legislature.
Well, I worked for a union, a public sector and private sector union, and they represent predominantly classified school employees working in Oregon's public sector schools. Classified meaning they're not certified teachers, they are not administrators, they're everybody else in a school, so that you can think of like secretaries, school bus drivers. About 40% of their membership are educational assistants. They are the people who provide direct instruction, one-on-one teaching to special ed kids. They get behavioral kids. Anybody who can't be in a mainstream classroom for the whole day, generally educational assistants have some part in their teaching.
Oh, really?
So that's who I represented.
Oh, and sometimes they're one-on-one with troubled kids, I gather.
The hardest kids to teach are the ones that my folks teach.
Uh-huh. And my sense is of those people, like the school lunch people, all of them. You also do the maintenance people? Are they also in the union?
Custodians, maintenance, technology, food service.
They're extremely poorly paid.
Very.
Many of them are
minimum wage workers, many of them.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier. I was sort of shocked. No, I wasn't shocked. I sort of wondered about it. The school districts are the worst employers, the cheapest employers, the most maneuvering employers, right?
Classified school employees, for the most part, take these jobs because they want to work with children and they want to work in schools, and they're willing to sacrifice to do it. Many of my educational assistants, for example, were certified teachers, but they didn't want to stand in front of a classroom of 40 kids hoping some of them got the lesson. They wanted to provide one-on-one instruction with students who need the help. So they took a position that pays far less than a certified teacher, so that they could do that kind of work with kids. So these are people who are there for the kids. That makes them vulnerable to their employer.
Yeah, I've often thought of like the school lunch people, all of those people, the custodians. They're very important in creating the school culture, right? Because the teachers are often want to maintain their authority, so aren't like friends with the kids. It's a little harder.
They don't have time.
But all of those people, like the school lunch people that you interact with all the time, who then learn the kids' names, and for young kids, all of those relationships, I think, are very important.
They are. Bill, that's why I worked for them for 20 years. I myself have learning disabled children. And my youngest son we were told by the doctors in the Child Development Center at OHSU that he would never be able to read in spite of his very high intelligence. And an educational assistant taught him to read. And he ended up graduating with honors and a double major from college. And it was an educational assistant that saved that kid. So, and, you know, custodians, schools don't have counselors anymore. They don't have social workers in them. They don't have people to help kids, and they have every child now goes to public school. And 50 years ago, every child didn't go to public school. The ones who couldn't fit into the mainstream classroom didn't go there. And that's not the way it is now. They get everything in school. They get major illnesses. They get mental health issues. They get drug and alcohol addiction issues. They get all of that. And sometimes when those kids reach out to an adult, the adult they reach out to is the one they feel they can trust. And that may not be the person of authority in the classroom or in the school. They may see the custodian as someone they can trust and they can talk to.
The school is this little society.
It's the whole world.
Yeah, and of course the school districts don't understand that. And of course the teachers are, there are many more teachers and they have much more money, the OEA, the Oregon Education Association, and they're fighting for decent pay for their teachers. And often the people you represented are left out, it seems to me. It's a sort of shameful in some ways, but that's what happens.
We so dramatically underfund our education system when we understand that it is the number one component of a civilization and it keeps us out of a third world. But that's the situation we're in. And I think that there are some administrators and superintendents who really don't care about some of their staff. But I think for the most part, they're just caught in this catch-22. They have to provide the best education they can for the students, and they're doing it in a world that diminishes every year in terms of resources. So they're doing it with far less staff than they had when I was in school, or when my kids were in school, for that matter. And they are suppressing everyone's salary. For a teacher, you have to have a master's degree to be a teacher in Oregon, and then you walk into a classroom for $50,000 a year. You're never going to pay off your student loans at that rate. And so that's ridiculous. It doesn't work. And for my members, they're hourly wage workers, and they suppressed those wages as much as they could. They replaced those workers. They laid them off and only replaced those that they had to. They've replaced them with temporary workers that they don't have to pay benefits to. And it's all short-term, get us through this school year kind of thinking that causes the long-term drain of quality of our education system. But we may not see it if you're not working in the school.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm talking to Tricia Smith, a Tribune of Worker Justice, also on the board of the NWJP. They work together with the Oregon School Employees Association that Tricia Smith recently retired from. Tricia, tell us about what happened in the minimum wage struggle in Salem recently.
I've been involved in every minimum wage increase fight we've had since 1990. And this was the only serious effort in the legislature. The legislature, I think, took up the issue because it was pretty clear that a good campaign could pass a $15 minimum wage. And that was what my union was fighting for, increasing the minimum wage statewide for everyone and making it $15.
$15 would raise the pay of a lot of the people you represent, too. It would raise it greatly.
Yes, it would. It would raise it greatly.
In fact, some of your people are just getting the minimum wage, right? What percent?
Oh, the further east you go, the higher the percentage is.
Uh-huh.
But we have minimum wage workers in the metro area, food service workers, for example. The other thing that school districts do is they reduce their hours. So they may be making $10 an hour, but they used to work 8 hours a day or 6 hours a day, and now they work 4 hours a day. Or they work even less than that. Some school districts, I've had members who have their time on the job reduced to 3 hours and 45 minutes. And the reason it's 3 hours and 45 minutes is because they would have to pay them benefits if it were 4 hours.
Ah, that's why they're the Walmart.
The Walmart of the public sector.
The public sector.
Minimum wage fight was a legislative fight this time. We had initiatives that were going to the ballot. The legislature knew that. And I think there were a lot of lobbyists for the business sector particularly who didn't want that to happen because we have won every minimum wage fight we took to the people. And they could see that. So they wanted the legislature to fix it. And that's what happened.
And you and your allies fought for...
We continued to fight for $15. Bit of a phase-in, but we did not support a tiered system where your wage depended on where you lived.
Tricia, let's conclude. Are you going to miss the legislative struggles?
I'm probably never going to stop advocating for people who need a voice, but I will not miss the huge workload and the ever-diminishing opportunity that I see for people. We can turn that around when we all stand up, make our legislators accountable. Even the Democrats, even the progressive Democrats, need a nudge from their constituents.
And from people like you. You know, what we'll have to talk about next, and we don't have time, but we'll do it, is what you see as the impact now of, sort of known as a Sanders campaign, but it's much more than that, than Bernie Sanders. It's a whole new set of understandings of a vast number of people from below that the old system was really taking advantage of them and making them horribly insecure and often hungry. And now there's really, it seems to me, an organized fight back, at least the possibility of it.
I think it began with the Occupy movement. Mm-hmm. Sanders tapped into that. We all need to stand up and fight for what we think. And I hate that word, fight. We just need to demand that our world is what we want it to be.
And the Occupy movement, and even before the Occupy movement, all of those people, the real activists like you, the visionaries, the fighters in the labor movement, and many other movements, mm-hmm. Sort of prepared the ground. Anyway, we have to end, but we'll talk again. Tricia Smith, thanks so much for talking to us.
I enjoyed it, Bill. You call me anytime.
Good. Thanks. So long.
Bye-bye.